Hi everybody, today is Friday, June 20th, 2025, and our friend Dmitry Orlov is back with us. Welcome back, Dmitry.
Good to be with you.
Before starting the talk, let us know how we can support your work.
The URL should be on your screen. It's boosty.to/ClubOrlov, ClubOrlov. I have an article up there right now about the current war going on, and a lively discussion there by some knowledgeable people. So I hope you join us. I also have some additional videos for you to watch in case you like videos better. So hope to see you there.
Yeah, I hope everybody joins Dmitry on his website. Dmitry, let's get started with what's going on between Iran and Israel. Last time we talked, we didn't know what was happening with the Iranian response, what was happening within Iran, and because everybody was somehow, Israelis were attacking, we didn't know the assassination coming out. What has happened, in your opinion, in the initial hours, and then Iranian came back and attacked Israel?
The blitzkrieg has failed. The Israeli attack on Iran is a dud. It didn't work. They infiltrated. They brought in drone parts. They assembled drones. They figured out who to assassinate. They marked all of these targets from satellite photos and maybe even drone reconnaissance. Excuse me. And they did kill. Excuse me. They did kill some people, but they were quickly replaced. Iran was up and running within 12 hours, and then launched its prepared attack on Israel, which is ongoing and will be going on practically forever. So what Israel did was perform some political assassinations, which is something it's good for. Israel is traditionally a terrorist state since its inception. Political assassination is really something that it's good at. It's one of its core competencies. But it didn't really have much of an effect because the Iranians had a chain of command that was resilient enough so that the people who were assassinated were very quickly replaced, and everything continued. Now, in terms of the airstrikes that the Israelis performed, they wasted many, many millions, perhaps several billion worth of armaments, blasting decoys that the Iranians put in various places. Basically, planes and rocket launchers that they hammered together out of sticks and plywood and painted. And of course, that was prepared too. Iran has unlimited capacity to put up decoys for Israel to destroy. And Israel did that. And then what commenced was a prepared Iranian response to Israeli attack. Israel opted to not develop nuclear weapons to avoid attack, but to deal with the attack when it comes by having a virtually unlimited number of ballistic missiles of different kinds with which to attack Israel. Now, you have to remember that Iran is a huge country, 1.5 million square kilometers. And Iran is a postage stamp sized country with its inhabited area something like 4,000 or 5,000 square kilometers. It's a little patch of very thickly settled ground. And everything in Iran is in one or two or three instances. So there are four fairly large power plants. There's one oil refinery. There's one big hospital, which, by the way, got bombed. It's not very difficult to make Israel uninhabitable, which is what Iran is in the process of doing. And this will continue until Iran becomes uninhabitable and the Israelis leave.
Dmitry, what has happened, and comparing to what has happened in Russia, and we see the two attacks coming days before the talks happening between Russia and Ukraine and between the United States and Iran. And the same sort of strategy have been used in these sort of attacks, with drones coming in and attacking in the strategic parts of the country. Do you believe that these two attacks, with which one came after another, we know that from the intelligence coming out of Iran, these people who were participating and collaborating with the Israelis, they said that they have been working on this plan for more than 10 years to be implemented in Iran. It seems they need long, they were preparing for this. And it seems that they tested it on Russia before going in Iran and tested it.
Well, the assembly of drones and the launching of drones was similar, but you know, it's not some kind of a genius plan. I mean, anybody could come up with that given the technology. So I don't know what to make of that. It could be same organization, or it could be different organizations that did the drone thing. Now, in terms of the overall effect, I would compare what happened to Russia at the beginning of the special military operation in February of 2022 to what happened in Iran now. Basically, when the special military operation started, all of these Western quote-unquote intelligence agencies told its sleeper cells in Russia, its agents, it's the people it recruited in Russia, to go out and protest and make trouble, etc. And that basically blew their cover for all time. So then it was up to Russian security services to basically round all of them up. A lot of them quickly left the country because they realized what was coming. And Russia was very easily purged of this corrosive social element that the West had spent years cultivating. Same thing happened in Iran. Basically, all of these Mossad recruits and all of these foreign agency sleeper cells were suddenly uncovered. They're being chased down, except Iran is not a liberal place like Russia, so they're getting beheaded. They're actually being killed, which should probably teach some of the others a lesson about how to let yourself be recruited by Mossad, and will probably have long-term lasting effects on Iranian security, positive effects.
Do you feel, as you compared the case of Russia and Iran, they were talking about regime change. I remember when the conflict in Ukraine started, they started with that, this is Putin's war. This is Putin's war. We have to do something about it. And right now it seems that Israelis are pursuing the same sort of strategy, regime change in Iran. Doesn't matter what they're talking about, but when you look at the strategy on their part, how is that possible? Even if we put ourselves in their shoes with these conditions that they're living in, is that possible?
Well, look, there was a brilliant plan with the Ukraine. Basically, the Ukraine would start the conflict, and the Russian army, which is permanently drunk and has rusty weapons and is completely demoralized, would just run away. Then there would be protests in the streets. People would, storm the Kremlin and overthrow the dread dictator Putin. That was the plan. How good a plan was that, would you say, on a scale of 1 to 10?
It was totally delusional.
It was totally delusional. Okay. So the plan with Iran was you kill some guards of the Islamic Revolution. You kill some you kill the negotiating team that was negotiating with the Americans, and you kill some politicians, and then you destroy some decoys, and blast this and that, and expect the regime to crumble. Well, what happened instead is people came together, you know, even the quote unquote liberals who hate wearing the hijab and don't go to the mosque as they're supposed to, suddenly became very, very patriotic Iranians in support of the regime. And suddenly the Ayatollah, who was kind of getting soft, I think, rallied the troops, which was a good thing for him to do, I guess. And so the Israeli attack had a really laudable effect on the Iranian society, making it very patriotic, very single-minded, and ready to endure hardships in order to do what it has been planning to do forever, which is destroy Israel.
How the rhetoric in the West is Iranian nuclear program, and they want to do something about Iranian capabilities in that term. Do you feel that they're going to achieve it by these attacks? They're going to get something more than what they were supposed to get through negotiations?
Well, I think it'll be just as successful as destroying the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, which don't exist and didn't exist. You know, Iran has what, a fatwa forbidding it from developing nuclear weapons. That has the force of law. So what is it? Is it playing games, or is it actually working on a different plan? Its major enemy is Israel. It has its two stated goals are to destroy Israel and thereby to banish the United States from the region. It's doing that using very long tunnels filled with ballistic missiles, which it can launch something between 30 and 50 a day at Israel forever, which is what it's doing. And there's nothing to stop it. There's nothing to hinder it. It can continue doing that. What does it need nuclear weapons for? Nothing. Now, it's a really annoying thing for a country to be able to build a nuclear weapon and yet not build one for you know, these jackal countries that think nothing of nuking other countries like the United States. That is just an unthinkable thing. If you can build a nuclear weapon, of course you would build one right away. So Netanyahu has been talking about the nuclear threat from Iran for, what, 30 years? And every time he says that Iran is 2 or 3 weeks or months or something like that, or maybe days, from building a nuclear weapon. So he's the boy who cried wolf, and people should stop paying attention to him. The fact is that, you know, Iran probably could build a nuclear weapon. In fact, some people in Iran now saying, please, please build a nuclear weapon. We're sick of these air raids by Israel. Just do something. But it's not really necessary, and I doubt that it's going to happen.
Even if Iran had nuclear weapons, they would never attack Israel with nuclear weapons, because let's add the nature of the conflict between Iran and Israel is because of Palestinians. It's because of Gazans, Palestinians. If they attack Israel, if the way Israel is picturing the situation, let's assume they're right, let's give them some sort of comfort in the way that they're thinking about the conflict. But Iran is not going to attack Israel with nuclear weapons because many of Palestinians, a lot of Palestinians would be influenced, the land would be influenced by the attack. Why do they need to do that? What's the
meaning? Well, that's not even the point. That's not even the point. The nuclear weapons are not intended to be used ever at all by anyone. They're intended to prevent nuclear weapons from being used, or and also to limit the scale of military confrontation, so that it's short of triggering a nuclear response. So you can have little wars, little regional conflicts like the one in the Ukraine, which doesn't threaten Russia at all. Everybody knows that it doesn't threaten Russia's sovereignty, because if it did, there would be the risk of a Russian nuclear response. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to be the one to launch a nuclear attack. The only person who did that is Harry Truman, the US president. There is now a circle of hell just for him. He's the only one in that circle of hell, frying on a frying pan. And nobody wants to go there with him. Nobody else wants to go to that circle of hell and be there for all of eternity with Harry Truman. So nuclear weapons are not intended to be used. Now, if Iran did have nuclear weapons, would Israel attack it? Well, not in the way it did, but it would probably still be subject to sanctions, infiltration, various ways of hampering its oil trade, all kinds of other annoyances. So I don't know that having a nuclear weapon would actually help.
That's why Iran is trying to negotiate. But as the foreign minister of Iran said, you're asking us to negotiate. We were negotiating when you have decided to attack us. And I think Donald Trump has destroyed each and every credibility of the United States in talks, because how can you imagine talking with a country while they're planning to attack you?
Well, anybody who actually negotiates with the United States is a little bit foolish, because show me the country that the United States didn't try to swindle by signing agreements with it. You have to be extremely silly to think that the United States will honor its agreements. If you disagree with that, ask some American Indians. How many deals have Americans signed with them, and how many have they broken?
Do you, Dmitry, when it comes to the negotiation with the United States, it seems that Donald Trump is not in a good position considering Ukraine or in the Middle East. He wants something that is not possible for Russia or Iran to deliver. And he wants to insist on his idea, on his terms. He wants to achieve those terms. Do you feel that he would somehow achieve some percentage of what he's asking for?
Well, look, the United States has lost its proxy war in the Ukraine. That has pretty much been admitted. Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, has admitted on camera, on record, that it's a proxy war. The Ukraine is just a proxy. It is the United States telling it what to do. And so that war has been lost. Everybody knows that it's the Ukraine, the proxy, has been defeated. And now it's basically just a slow grind. Russia nibbling away at Ukrainian territory and destroying, demilitarizing is the Russian term, all of the Ukrainian military. That's going very well for Russia, going horribly for the Ukrainians, as it should, and will continue. So the United States wants to shift focus from that fiasco to something else. Now, what happened is I guess that there's been some kind of a conversation between the Israelis and Trump, where the Israelis said, look, we have this wonderful operation ready to go to knock over Iran. And it's the it'll be wonderful. Look, you destroyed Iraq, you destroyed Libya, you destroyed Syria. The Arab Spring was such a great success. So now Egypt and all of the North African Arab countries are severely weakened, cannot really pose any sort of a challenge. And the last operation is regime change in Iran. And look, we have everything ready. We know who to assassinate. We have the son of the Shah of Iran crawling out of the woodwork and ready to be crowned or whatever it is they do with Shahs, and stuck as an American puppet in Tehran. And everything will be wonderful, and it'll be just a little victorious campaign. You will be the victor. You will have triumph and accolades and respect. And Trump, of course, said, yeah, okay, go ahead. And so Israel mounted its blitzkrieg. It completely failed. Now Israel is being methodically destroyed by Iranian rocketry. And what can Trump do now? So what he said is, I'll take my sweet time. I'll take 2 weeks to decide what to do. And meanwhile, he's grouping all of the assets that America has in the Persian Gulf, because why not? The United States already has thousands of people in military bases in the region that Israel can hit at will and cause thousands of American casualties.
You mean Iran can...
Iran can hit at will, causing thousands of American casualties. So why not put some aircraft carriers there as well for Iran to destroy? Iran has several different ways to sink American aircraft carriers at this point, including very exotic supersonic torpedoes. But that's just posturing, and Trump has done that before with North Korea. Basically, tell aircraft carriers to steam toward North Korea, and then something happens, nobody knows what, and they steam away from North Korea and are found somewhere else in the world. And that's happened before, so I'm sure that this is what he's basically saying. In 2 weeks, maybe something else will happen and everybody will forget about it.
Yeah. Actually, they're talking about attacking. It seems that the conversation in the United States is if the United States is capable of destroying Iranian nuclear facilities, because so far Israel was not successful in damaging or destroying them. They're talking about tactical nuclear weapons being used to destroy the somehow Fordo and these sites in Iran, or Natanz, Fordo, and these—they're deeply under the ground. And I don't know. I talked with Professor Ted Postol. He said that no, that's not possible. That's not going to be. That's delusional somehow. They cannot achieve it. Do you feel that the United States would go to that, those sort of measures to attack Iran with tactical nuclear bombs?
No, what they'll do is they'll fly in the B-2 bomber with the giant bunker buster that they have in there, and they'll drop the bunker buster somewhere, doesn't matter where, and then claim victory and go home. Now, the point is that the centrifuges are buried under 100 meters of rock. The bunker buster, under best possible conditions, can only penetrate maybe 60 meters. And the other thing is that, okay, well, they'll destroy some centrifuges, and that would be sad. The world needs more uranium centrifuges, not fewer. You know, everybody's building nuclear reactors, and uranium enrichment is something that Americans don't know how to do anymore. They rely on the Russians. And so more uranium enrichment facilities in the world would be a very good thing, and destroying them would be just downright stupid. But they wouldn't even be able to do that. As far as the actual enriched uranium that the Iranians that the Iranians have that could be used to build some nuclear charges, well, the Iranians have already said that they've moved that material out of there and hid it somewhere. They hid it. There's no point in bombing centrifuges. It's just a completely pointless activity. Not only is it impossible, but it's pointless. So they'll probably do something, because they're very good at lying about what it is they do. So they'll do something idiotic and then lie about it and then hope that everybody forgets that it ever happened.
This is the first time that Israel is fighting a country that is capable to fight back. They were attacking Lebanon, Gazans, Palestinians, Yemenis, and Syria, name it. All these countries around Israel. This is the first time they're feeling the pain of an attack, of a fight, a real fight. Do you think that would somehow transform the Israeli society, or maybe do some sort of changes in the mindset of those people who are deciding about these endless wars?
Well, to start with, Israel is not a sovereign country. It is a pretend democracy, but it has really two prerogatives. One is to make sure that Americans continue to support it, because without American support, the country basically ceases to exist. It's basically a big chunk of the Pentagon budget that goes to Israel and a bunch of New York Jews. Without those two sources of support, Israel just fails to exist. So those are the two main prerogatives that it has. And then, you know, it's a bit of a cult where there's a lot of internal discipline. And of course, people who are in Israel have to pretend to be patriotic Israelis and not say the wrong thing, etc. They can pretend to have some kind of political power, but it's only pretense. So they demonstrate, but then nothing happens. And they can pretend that they have this viable democratic system, but then Netanyahu will still be in charge, no matter what happens, instead of being in jail, which is what he's supposed to be, where he's supposed to be. So it's all kind of a joke. Everybody knows that this is like the Kingdom of Jerusalem. It's a crusader outpost. You know, the crusader outpost lasted for 200 years. That's how long the Kingdom of Jerusalem held on. I don't think Israel will hold on for that long. I don't think that, you know, it'll last that long this time. And then once the Israelis stop being Israelis and start being Jews again, they once again become this migratory nation, you know, and diffuse all over the landscape, and Israel ceases to exist and they stop being Israeli. They just go back to being Jews. So that's what I expect will eventually happen.
We had Vladimir Putin talking with Xi Jinping in China. They were talking about Iran and the case of the Middle East. Both countries are concerned about what's going on in the Middle East. But Donald Trump, in his latest talk with Vladimir Putin, as Vladimir Putin suggested to interfere, to come in and mediate the situation, he said that don't do that, do something with the war with Ukraine. It's somehow the way that he was picturing that Donald Trump was picturing the situation. He doesn't need anybody to help him. He wants to do everything by himself. What are the main concerns on the part of Russia and China when it comes to what's going on in the Middle East, in your opinion?
The main concern is making sure that Iran does not fail, that Iran holds together, and that when peace comes, it comes on Iran's terms. Iran is very important to China because China is very much involved in the oil and gas business in Iran. Iran is extremely important to Russia because of the North-South corridor that's being built, which will allow Russia another trade route other than the Northern Passage. It will not do anything to jeopardize that southern route. In terms of the threats to Iran from Israel, it really won't take much for China and Russia to make it so that so that Israeli jets cannot fly over Iranian territory. In fact, some of that has already happened. There were some military transports flying into Iran from China, and everybody's guessing what was on board, but it's quite likely that what those jets were carrying was radio warfare equipment. China has some of the most advanced radio warfare equipment on the planet, and once that stuff is deployed, Israeli pilots will basically be flying blind. They won't be able to see anything on their displays, and will just basically have to turn back. So that's one thing that could very easily happen.
Looking at the behavior of China, Russia, and compare it to what's going on with the United States under the Trump administration, which many of us were supposed, I personally had some sort of hope that he could bring some changes in the foreign policy of the United States, because we had Tulsi Gabbard in the administration, we had people of reason in the administration. It seems that as time goes by, they're losing it. And even Tulsi Gabbard, Donald Trump said he doesn't care about what Tulsi Gabbard is talking about. Do you feel that the same thing is happening in Russia, in the mindset of Russia and China? They have to fight the United States economically, politically, militarily. There is no reason to... They don't see any sort of any other path toward some sort of communication with the United States, but fighting back.
Well, look, I think that Trump is being very quite reasonable with Russia, realizing that the United States absolutely needs Russian help. It needs Russian help in a lot of areas. For instance, what's keeping the lights on in the United States is Russian enriched uranium. I think Trump is smart enough to realize that. There are a lot of other issues where Russia is extremely important to the United States. And there are a lot of opportunities, business opportunities. Trump is a businessman. And everybody recognizes that Russia is a rapidly developing economy with lots of opportunities for American business. And the fact that American companies have been blocked politically from taking part in Russian economic development is not something that Trump's friends in the business community are happy about. So he really wants to put all of this military political nonsense aside and take care of business. He wants to take care of business. Now, with China, the situation is a little bit different because there's a structural trade deficit that the United States has with China that the United States cannot do anything about at all, and that China doesn't really need to do anything about and can't be forced to do anything about it. So there was this trade war that Trump has tried to fight with China and lost. And nobody knows what the final agreement with China came to, but a reasonable guess is that Taiwan is no longer going to be talked about. It's back to being part of China. And if you notice, Taiwan has suddenly faded from the scene. There was all this talk about Taiwan, and then when it came to Iran either allowing rare earth exports to the United States or not allowing them, suddenly Taiwan is out of the picture. And, you know, 6 months of rare earths will go to the United States, meaning that the defense industry and the auto industry and much else won't have to shut down in the United States. So Trump is kind of a loser at this point. And I don't think that he actually understands what's going on that well. You know, he's a showman, you know, he's a showman, he's a businessman, he's being a politician is not second nature to him. He's not that good at it. So he tries to deflect, he tries different maneuvers. They tend to be disastrous. I think he's losing it. He's old and he's too old to learn new tricks. Plus, I believe that he found a bottle of Biden's stupid pills somewhere in the Oval Office and has been taking them secretly from everyone, because he's getting kind of stupid in his old age. So I don't think much will be happening with Trump. This is like half a year into his administration, maybe a little less. And everybody can see that he has achieved nothing. He has achieved absolutely nothing. And there's no reason to think that he ever will.
We have a very substantial and important, I would argue, a very damaging division within MAGA America. These MAGA that supported Donald Trump in his to win the presidential election. Right now, Tucker Carlson, you look at the Matt Gaetz, these people are, even Tulsi Gabbard said if the United States goes to war with Iran in the Middle East, she may consider resigning from the government. These are people who were supporting Donald Trump's candidacy. And it seems that Donald Trump is not delivering on what he has promised to do. And do you think that these people would have some sort of leverage on Donald Trump, or may cause some sort of pressure on the administration to reconsider its decision when it comes to the Middle East?
I don't think it's even the Middle East. I think it's everything. I think they're realizing that Trump is basically an idiot. I think that is actually dawning on a lot of people, is that he's just a blithering fool. He thinks that he can somehow manage the planet by, you know, using caps lock on his keyboard and when tweeting things. He thinks that, you know, he can run some kind of tweetocracy and win that way, which is just incredibly stupid. And then he doesn't know what he's doing and says so. His recent pronouncements are sort of like, well, I might attack Iran or I might not attack Iran. Nobody knows what I'm going to do. And anybody who thinks that they know what I'm going to do is lying, because even I don't know what I'm going to do. Yeah, that's basically the spirit of what he says. Now, that should really fill people with confidence. I mean, your commander in chief, you know, knows exactly what he's doing, has strategy stretching, you know, over the horizon, can manage our affairs better than anyone else. Sure, he doesn't know what he's going to do next week. That's wonderful. He's putting up giant flagpoles next to the White House because they're wonderful. He's probably considering plans to have his face carved into Mount Rushmore, and that's probably much more interesting for him than the war with Iran or anything like that.
For the leadership in Iran, Russia, and China, what's going on is somehow different from what we've seen before. What does that mean? It means that if something happens in the Middle East, logically, the price of oil would go up and Russia would benefit from that. But if something happens to Iran, Russia is totally against it because they know how important the, as you've mentioned, with these projects, new projects, in terms of the security, how important Iran is for Russia. And on the other hand, you look at China, sees this, what's going on in the Middle East. The price of oil, if goes up, it would hurt China. And China knows if something happens with Iran and Russia, they would be the next target. You know, it's somehow complicated, and at the same time, it's so simple to understand the to find a long-term strategy, not a short-term strategy. But it seems that in the mind of the administration in the United States, it's all about the tactics. It's all about what can get for the time being. They're not thinking about the future, how they can just assume a participation, somehow collaboration between the East and the West. Do you think that's totally gone from the scene?
Well, I don't think the administration in the U.S. can even manage tactics at this point. I mean, look at the tactic of quick victory over Iran, where that has led them. I think all they can manage at this point is optics, how something looks. And what they're trying to do is to avoid absolute outright shame, or at least to obscure it with new antics of some sort. You know, if two giant flagpoles don't work, maybe they'll blow up a bridge somewhere. I don't know. Maybe they'll have some kind of a ridiculous failure to draw interest away from foreign affairs. Americans, you know, they're not that interested in the rest of the world, and they're very easily distracted. Their attention basically is limited to what you can squeeze in between two television commercials. And they've been trained to be that way over several generations now. So they're very easy to distract. So, you know, basically you go from Iran to something else, and that something else is now in the news and Iran is not in the news. I mean, how many Americans have noticed that Taiwan is no longer in the news? Have you heard any American notice that? No. It's like out of sight, out of mind. So that's kind of the way they manage it, and leaving it to Russia, China, Iran, North Korea to figure out what the long-term strategies are.
Do you feel that these countries would finally get some security agreement to protect the projects that they're doing? Because these, it can, as you've mentioned, the North-South Corridor or the Silk Road, all these projects, economic projects that are happening among these countries, they need some sort of security agreement to protect them. Are we getting there? Are we finally getting to a point these countries protecting what they're doing?
Yes. It's called SCO, Shanghai Cooperation Organization. It's there. It's in place. There are various other security frameworks. There are discussions, active discussions. There's work. There's being done, ministerial level work, not only between Moscow and Beijing, but between Russian and Chinese regions. There's regional cooperation across the border. And similarly with Iran. So the security frameworks are in place. Don't worry about it. Everything is under control.
We had this St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, Dmitry. If you were to mention the main points in this forum, and what are the highlights of this forum that you can mention for us in terms of the bigger picture of the region, the bigger picture of what's going on in the world, and the way that somehow the eastern part of the world trying to find some sort of solution for their problems in terms to dealing with the United States and with the West?
Well, the forum is ongoing. It's just open. So far, it's been press conferences and some remarks. I haven't really paid attention to much of the international discussion, but you know, it is in St. Petersburg, so it was attended by various officials, Russian officials, talking about the Russian economy. And there's an incongruous situation right now where the interest rate is 19%. So bank deposits pay 19% interest, but inflation is now 5%. So there's 14% pure profit from money sitting in the bank. And on the one hand, this is a good result. And on the other hand, 19% is something that stifles the mortgage market and stifles the auto market and is not going to be conducive to high economic growth moving forward. So there's a lot of discussion of how to maneuver gradually out of this situation without causing this flood of money savings that the Russian people have from flooding the market and causing more inflation and starting a new round of inflation and causing the economy to overheat. And the big limiting factor right now in Russia is the labor market is really tight. There are quite a few people, men, able-bodied men, in the military right now. When that military action is over, they will be back in the labor force, and it'll be possible to have a round of expansion, economic expansion, and good economic growth. But right now it's this uncertain period of time where, on the one hand, there's a war going on. On the other hand, the country is living as if there's no war. If you go out into the streets in St. Petersburg and Moscow, you know, it's a bunch of people, well-dressed people, going to restaurants and shows, etc. And life is good. So there's some basic internal incongruity that people are trying to sort out.
It seems that the first priority of the United States is the West Asia, the Middle East. They're focusing right now on attacking Iran, fighting Iran, making some sort of chaos in the West Asia. But I would assume the second concern would be in the Central Asia, that Iran and Russia and Chinese even, they tried to do something there. Do you feel that the Central Asia and is a key Central Asia to what's going on in Syria as well? How about, do you feel that they're going to consider the Central Asia as one of the important focus points as time goes by with the case of the West Asia?
Well, no, Central Asia is economically a bit disappointing. Socially, it's more or less under control, politically also. It's rather important to make sure that Iran is stable and reasonably well governed, to avoid those countries from being destabilized. It's also rather important to keep the British out of there. The British are famous meddlers in the region. They just can't get used to the fact that they're now just they're no longer an empire. They're just a, you know, little island in the North Sea that nobody really cares about. So they can't really project force, but they can meddle and they can corrupt and destabilize, which is what they try to do. And they recently signed a deal with Kazakhstan. I don't know how they managed to do it, but they did. And I'm sure that the effects of that will eventually become destabilizing. The Brits haven't done a good thing for that region practically ever.
Dmitry, two projects, one in the Middle East, the other one in Ukraine, running by, you've mentioned the British Army. We know that the situation of the British Army and how capable they are as we talk. But when it comes to the intelligence, it seems that they're so capable, or they somehow so much connected with other intelligence that they can do a lot of damage to Russia, Iran. They're focusing on China as well. I don't know if something happened to China in that term. Do you feel that these attacks, after all, were prepared by the British, the mastermind, what was the British intelligence?
I don't know. I seriously don't know.
But do they really, when it, the reason I asked the question about the British intelligence, it doesn't seem that they're playing on the scene, they're behind the scene talking about what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on with the Zelensky administration. We know how important the British intelligence is in, when it comes to the administration in Ukraine. We know how connected they are to what's going on in Israel. But how is that going to be translated in the way that the United States is trying to play the role in both conflicts? Who has the upper hand? Do you feel that still British have the upper hand in the, in terms of imposing some sort of condition on the United States, or the United States knows what it's doing and they know exactly what's going on with the British intelligence or with the British government?
Well, I'm sure the Brits, well, you know, the Brits have a traditional way of manipulating the Americans. And now that the Americans are in complete disarray, you know, Trump is, you know, non-functional, basically. His administration is fighting within itself. His MAGA thing is falling apart, and he's dealing with some kind of a Soros revolution thing on his own soil, and fighting it out with his own judiciary, etc. I'm sure that they find lots of ways of conniving their way in and meddling and destabilizing things further, and maybe even gaining something from it. I don't know, but that's a reasonable guess.
Just to wrap up this session, we've learned that the United States, together with Germany, send the let me just code it here based on the information that the Israel received 14 weapon shipments from the United States and Germany since the start of Iran war. It's been just 2 days and 3 days that they have received 14 weapon shipments. Germany is somehow, when we talk about Germany, somehow it's not that much bold in our mind, but they're doing a lot to help both conflicts in Ukraine and in right now in the Middle East. Do you feel that Germany, with what's going on with the economy of Germany, they can sustain this sort of aid to Israel and Ukraine if these two conflicts continue?
Germany is sending American weapons to Israel. That's all that's happening. Anti-rocket, ballistic defense.
But they paid for these weapons. These weapons are from Germany, coming from Germany. They paid for it, bought it, and it's in Germany. They send them to Israel. Yeah?
Yeah, well, Germany is not a sovereign country. So when the Pentagon orders them to do something, they do it. But basically, what's going on is that Israel is trying to find air defense rockets wherever it can, because right now it's only stopping something like half of Iran's rockets. Half of the rockets are getting through. Maybe it's 40%, but an appreciable number. So the air defense system of Israel is being degraded, as was planned, and they're trying to import some rockets in order to delay that. They can't stop the process, but they can delay it, they can slow it down. That's what's happening with these shipments.
we had Washington Post reporting that Israel doesn't have the missiles to be used in the air defense system for the if this the war continues for they have sort of 10 or 12 days to sustain the situation. On beyond that, they're not gonna be able to defend themselves, to use the air defense systems. And is that the reason that Donald Trump is putting a lot of pressure on Iran? That we're gonna attack, you have to leave Tehran. You have to, the leadership in Iran should be careful, we're gonna attack you. It seems that Israel is running out of ammunition and running out of missiles. That's why they're doing this. Maybe we can translate it this way.
Well, I'd leave Trump's trash talking, whoever, just completely out of the equation. But what's going on is Israeli air defense systems are being degraded. We are probably 2 or 3 weeks away from Tehran just basically being able to blast away at anything it wants to on Israeli territory. And what the US can do to stop that is a very good question. What the assets that it's deploying to the region are not air defense assets because it doesn't have any. The thing with the West, be it in the Ukraine, be it in Europe, in the United States, anywhere else in the world, is the West does not have good air defenses. It just doesn't. And it doesn't have a good stockpile of air defense rockets. So once those are depleted, you have to wait many years until that stockpile recovers because they make new ones very slowly. So that is a very important part of the equation, I think.
Yeah. Before wrapping up, Dmitry, how can we support your work? Please let us know.
Well, you should see a URL on your screen. Type it into your browser and go there and subscribe and read my articles. They're both in English and in French. For those who find English troublesome, I understand. And so please go there, continue. You know, contribute to the discussion, ask questions. Hope to see you there.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dmitry, for being with us today. Great pleasure, as always.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.